Even the French weren't that bad.
Just get all the stuff done in the end. And there's another resource you can use. It's the QCC Writing Center. Like, send them the thing, they'll be like you just send them, like, professors, stupid paper website trash,
yeah.
Right?
And they look at it?
And they'll look at it, and then they'll go through your whole thing.
Is that true?
It's very
Is
true.
Is it free?
It's free.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
All right, we gotta finish up the judicial branch and get into the bureaucracy. Yes, sir.
Professor, in your on your paper website, it says that we have to have proper punctuation and proper spelling and stuff like that, and college level stuff. I found 2 errors in just that paper slide.
I found those too.
Yeah.
And so I would like to put a criticism in that we should have more lenient things if we look at your stuff and there's errors in it.
No, do you see how I grade those errors? So if it's less than 10 errors, you don't get any penalty. So, and by the way, where are they?
Want me to show them you right now?
You send them to me, because I will potentially give you extra credit on it.
Sweet. That's why I asked.
Where the hell are we? Oh, yeah. All right. So we're talking about the departments in the court. We know that there is a department for the SJC. There's a department for the appeals court. There is the superior court. There's the district courts. There's also the Boston Municipal Court. There's probate. There is juvenile courts. Those are the 7 departments. But there is other important personnel that are involved in the judiciary branch. And the biggest one is the commissioner of probation. The commissioner's job is to maintain Massachusetts' central file of all of the individuals with criminal records, and he also performs certain supervisory tasks that are in respect to the probation departments that exist within the trial courts. In other words, he makes sure people who were found guilty by a jury of their peers that all of the proper records are kept. Now, probation is part of the court system. Probation is part of the court system. What is probation? Yes. Some of you are criminal justice majors.
Set of rules that you have to follow following your sentence. Yes.
Okay. You're right. So it occurs when you've gone before a judge, right?
Yeah.
Are you penalized necessarily?
Isn't probation where you like can't leave the state, you got to stay in like a certain area?
Yeah, it's a bunch of
these rules, you're going like straight to jail.
So that's it. So you were found guilty, but you don't go to jail. This is an alternative to going to jail. And if you violate those rules, you go to jail. So it's not a pardon. It is still a punishment. But it's an alternative to incarceration. So someone will get probation if they're convicted of a crime and maybe they don't have a past record. So what does that involve? You get a probation officer, you have to call and check in. You have to document your behavior. Sometimes you're not allowed to leave the state. Sometimes you got to wear little ankle bracelets.
Drug tests.
You got to submit the drug tests. If you got convicted of DUI, you could, maybe have to get like one of those breathalyzer units added to your column of your car.
Blow into it. And
yeah.
It shows that you have a blood alcohol content above.
It will not turn on, right? Oh, and those are awful. Those are awful. I know I have a relative that is a habitual alcoholic, and I wish the courts would put the person in jail for their own well-being, but they've always managed to, I don't mess around, even if it's a family member. I don't excuse their bad behavior. Oh, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't do it for my own kids. But, this person, habitual alcoholic, lots of problems. Luckily, they never killed anybody, but it's almost like inevitable that, the odds are eventually going to run out. But after the last time they drove a car off into a ditch, They were found guilty, and the court implemented one of those breath systems, and it never works. It fails frequently. So if that happens, there's only a certain number of licensed garages in the state that are certified to repair them. So this family member lives in Millville. The nearest garage, I think, is in Holden, that's licensed to do it. So you sit in your car, you're trying to go to work, you go and you do your morning breath, and it's just nothing. It's dead. You got to get it towed. It's going to go all the way up there. There's a line of cars already at the shop waiting to get fixed. You could lose your car for a couple of weeks. So it goes back to what I told you, what I tell my kids. Don't be dumb. Don't put yourself in that position.
My question is, so with DUIs, I know they get a suspension for the first offense for their driver's license, but in that case, where they install that in the car, is that once they get their license back?
That's if they get, like, for instance, if you get a work-related license.
Oh, okay.
So you could possibly get your license suspended during non-working hours. So if you got to drive to work because maybe you're the breadwinner, you can plead with the court, and they will give you a license that's good. So if you work 9 to 5, maybe they'll give you a license that's only valid from 7 to 7 or something like that. All right. Well, if we know what probation is, what's parole?
Is that what you get when you get out of jail?
100%. So, probation is an alternative to incarceration. Parole is what you get when you are incarcerated, but maybe you're released early for good behavior. So, probation is monitored by the courts, because if you break probation, boom, you're going to jail. Parole is actually monitored by the correctional system. Don't confuse the terms. Don't confuse the terms. By the way, the governor does have the power to pardon someone who is on probation or someone who is on parole. But what is necessary? What must the governor get to give a pardon?
Approval.
Of?
Which state?
No.
Is it the board?
No.
Is there a board in the prison that...
No. Governor's going to pardon somebody.
Governor's Council?
Governor's Council. Governor's Council. That was a review. Yes.
Does that include the turkey as well?
I don't think governor does a turkey.
The president does a turkey.
Yeah, the president's usually a turkey.
Yeah, I know, but maybe governors get their own turkey.
What?
No. Governor could be a turkey, but... I don't think the governor pardons turkey. I mean, maybe. I've never seen it. All right. All right. So what happens if you get parole? And by the way, this is largely true through the whole country. If you get parole, you will have to first appear before the parole board. And then you will have a hearing. Parole is granted to those who are potentially going to be released back into the community from incarceration. Now, the parole board hearing is almost like a trial. You, as the potential parolee, has the ability to present evidence of your good behavior. But here's the thing. Anyone connected to the crime that you committed also has a right to testify. So they could come in and say, no, you're still a danger to my family, you're still a danger to the community, and they shall not be released. But ultimately, all parole decisions are decided by a 5-member board. If somebody receives parole, they are assigned a parole officer. And the amount of check-ins really just depends upon the nature of the parole agreement. But if the parolee fails to comply, they go back to jail. Now, by the way, if the parolee commits another crime, they go back to jail, and then they're going to have another trial for the new crime that they committed. So if you are a parolee and for any reason you violate any terms, you will go back and you will have to fulfill whatever the maximum sentence you received at trial.
You seen the movie Ant-Man?
Yes.
He had like the echo bracelet and he would have to like sneak out of his house. So,
that,
like,
no, wait, wasn't that Ant-Man and Wasp that he had the bracelet?
Mm-mm. I think that was the first Ant-Man.
No, I don't think so. I think you're wrong. No, because he got out of it by shrinking down and putting the bracelets on the engrossed ant after he did the slide down the stairs with his daughter.
He's right, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ah, hoorah!
It was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I'm trying to think what that, yeah, I'm trying to think. I haven't watched one of the Ant-Man movies in a while, though, so I'm trying to remember.
I got you.
It's still kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Okay. That's exactly what we're talking about. All right. Now, in terms of probation, like we said, probation is a punishment in itself. But here's the thing. A judge does not have to grant probation. It's completely up to the judge. It's the judge's discretion. And it's true in all states in the country. So, similar to parole, if a judge gives you this, there's a time, like a sentence, you're on probation for 3 years. And there are conditions that are imposed. And again, we've already talked about, it could be an ankle bracelet, it could be a daily requirement check-in, it could be drug tests, it could be, you know, whatever the judge imposes, that's what the person has to adhere to. And of course, failure, probation's revoked, whew, off to jail you go. And the individuals that the people on parole have to report to are called probation officers, and they work within the courts. There are two principal groupings. There are some that serve the district courts. There are some probation officers that work with the superior courts. The ones that serve the district courts are generally the least experienced, because the people that they're going to engage you are the ones that committed the least offenses. Whereas the superior courts, those are more serious crimes. So typically what you do is you have the more experienced probation officers working in those ranks. Bum, bum, bum. I'm trying to see if I got anything else in here important. Because I got a whole bunch of notes, and a lot of it doesn't show up on the test, so. Oh, there are also separate probation officers for kids that go before the juvenile court system. Because often what happens if it's a juvenile that commits a first offense, and it's a minor crime, you know, they will be released on probation as well. And that could involve, you know, being put in another family's house, you know, to be supervised. That could be you have to go to a special school during the day. You know, there's a whole bunch of different contingencies that are out there. In Massachusetts, there are over 400 probation officers, and there are 500 parole officers. Question.
There was 400 parole officers, or was that 500 parole officers?
400 probation, 500 parole officers. All right, the last section that I have in terms of personnel is staffing. Because obviously the judges don't do all the work in the courts. Truth be told, the vast majority of the work that's done in each different court system is handled by a clerk and other staff members. Like we said before, the clerk, their primary job is to be the head person that works in the office. They're the head agent, the head administrative official. Oftentimes, it's the clerk that hires the rest of the staff. They are typically people that are there for their entire career. They got a job in the office when they were young, work decade after decade, and eventually were promoted up through the ranks. Obviously, their biggest responsibility is record keeping. Make sure all the forms are filed properly. Make sure all the forms are filled out properly. Make sure all the filing fees are collected, and so forth. We also have elected positions. There are some elected officials that work in the courts, such as the Register of Probate. There's an interesting dynamic because you have the employed clerk who technically is the supervisor, but they have to work with this elected official who technically is like the boss. The Register of Probate serves 6-year terms. And there's one for every county. So the current Register of Probate in Worcester County is Stephanie Fatman, wife of State Senator Ryan Fatman.
And they have the Fatman Fund.
Yes, exactly. There also is a Register of Deeds, but it's not going to come up, and I don't know why. Maybe because I mentioned it when I talked about the land court. I must have thrown it in there. Let me go back. Land court. Why can't I not find the land court in my notes? There's the family court. There's the housing court. There's the superior court. Where the F is the land court? I don't know. It's in there somewhere. I must have mentioned it. My notes are really messed up. Oh, land department. Here we go. Land department. Oh, yeah, I did mention registry deeds. Okay, very good. All right. Now, the general court, our state legislature, has also authorized the creation of assistant clerks whose job is to work in whatever duty that the clerk or the elected official deems necessary. But not all court systems have assistant clerks. It depends upon the size. So if it's a big court like Worcester, every single court in that building has a clerk and several assistant clerks, as well as the day-to-day staff. But if you go down to, say, the Webster Dudley Courthouse, that's not really a big court, and I don't think they have an assistant clerk. They have the clerk and they have the staff members. Massachusetts is also interesting in that we have another elected official called the sheriff. Now, unlike sheriffs in the majority of the states, the sheriff has no law enforcement functions. Our sheriffs are not cops. The job of our sheriff is actually to oversee our prisons. The sheriff's department also does other things, such as delivering summons to court, other type of official documentation. The sheriffs are also responsible for transporting those people sentenced to incarceration from the court to the prison. Yep.
Do they drive vans that say sheriff on?
Yes.
I drove by one today.
It's usually the assistant sheriffs or deputy sheriffs that drive in the vans.
Yeah, it was like a white van. It just said sheriff of Worcester, I think, on it.
Yep, so they could be transporting documents. They could be transporting people. Also in Massachusetts, most of the prisons have work programs. So prisoners who are there for nonviolent crimes actually have the ability to get day releases from the jails. Of course, they're supervised, and they go out and they do community service. And again, if they're nonviolent, they have the ability to kind of like work off some of the time that they owe. So in Sutton, we've had the sheriff's department bring prisoners. They help renovate a baseball field for our Little League program. They helped strip and paint Town Hall. They worked at one of our historical sites. So it's a good program, particularly because we all know there are people that just do stupid things that are in the wrong place at the wrong time, made one bad decision, but of course they have to pay the piper. They have to deal with the consequences of their actions. So they find themselves before court, they're found guilty, and they go away. But that doesn't mean they're violent. There are also officers that work within the courts. Other states refer to them as bailiffs. But in Massachusetts, they're called court officers. Their job is to secure the safety of each courthouse in our state. So, they're the guys that stand, gals that stand at the door when you got to go through the metal detector. They're the ones that get to walk around with badges and guns. They protect the court, each individual courtroom. They monitor the safety and security of the buildings, and so forth. And the last official that I have on my list are the prosecutors for the state. Every single county, all 14 counties, elect district attorneys. And the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, as an executive officer, also elects the Attorney General. The Attorney General is supposed to represent the state in all major crimes and criminal activity. The district attorneys do it for the lesser crimes on a county-by-county basis. To be an Attorney General, we already said, you have to be a member of the Massachusetts Bar. Same thing with district attorneys.
Oh, what did you say the district attorneys
do? They're elected and they do it on a county basis.
Okay.
I believe the district attorneys serve 4-year terms. And I think it's coterminous with the governor. It's true, because there was no attorney, district attorney on this year's ballot. Yeah. So it must be the midterm. So there is one attorney general, there's 14 district attorneys, so we have 14 counties, and every single court system or county has in their office assistant district attorneys. They are paid employees, and they're the ones who usually go into the trials. Because most district attorneys, yeah, they're lawyers, but they're more politicians than anything. So in terms of actual prosecution, the expertise comes from the ADAs, the assistant district attorneys. And the pay scale for those, isn't that great, but not that bad. I think most assistant district attorneys get paid like $100,000, $120,000 a year. All right, questions? Oh, I lied. We also have medical examiners. These are the guys that go out to the crime scenes. And they're the ones who declare people dead. Now, in order for a death to be properly filed, when the
ambulance shows up to someone's house and someone died either of natural or unnatural causes, they're the ones that come in and basically file the reports that certify death. There are medical examiners in each county, but of course the guys that are the ambulance chasers typically are the assistant medical examiners. Now, depending upon the nature of the crime scene and depending how busy the assistant medical examiners are, sometimes they come before everything's cleaned up. So that's the reason why if, say, your neighbor happens to pass away and you have the police tape outside, they'll usually lock the site down for several hours until the medical examiner can come out and basically confirm the fact that the person's dead and, you know, kind of make decisions as to how they died. What else do we got? I guess that's it. All right, so there are all of the people that work within the judicial system. We also have in Massachusetts what is known as the Judicial Council. The Judicial Council is an unpaid board that is made up of 6 retired judges, plus 4 members of the Massachusetts Bar Association. And they're appointed by the governor for terms. And the terms vary, but they cannot be more than 4 years. And the people who serve on the Judicial Council are term limited. You only can do it for a term. Their job is to review how our court function. They look at all the data. They look at staffing levels. They look at budgets. They look at the amount of cases that are filed. They look at any complaints that may have been filed. And basically what they do is they make the recommendations, reports, that go to the legislature that could trigger new policy, or budget increases, or staffing reductions. You know, because obviously if you go into a courthouse at like, say, 11 o'clock on a Wednesday, and you have 150 staff members that are sitting around like they got a pole up their butt, because they got nothing to do, you know, obviously that could be construed to be a waste of the taxpayers' money. So they'll study the business. Is that just a fluke, or is that how it is? And if that's how it is, you know, maybe the next following year you get the budget cut and reduce the staffing. Questions? They cannot suggest new laws, though. They only review the operations. All right. No questions on that. Our state, as do all other states in the United States of America, also have juries. In the Sixth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and in Article, I think it's 19, of our Declaration of Rights in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and as it can be found in all of the constitutions of every single state in the country, you are guaranteed a trial by jury if you are accused of committing a crime. Now, here's the thing. You also can get a jury if you are filing a civil suit. So you're going to sue someone for money. But that's not a right. So how does it work? You get convicted of a crime, a jury will be selected. If you're going to sue somebody for money, you have to request a jury trial. If you do not request a jury trial for a civil claim, you will have what's called a bench trial,
which means you just go before the judge. One last thing. If you are convicted of a crime, while you are given a jury by right, you can actually request not to have a jury. You can request to have a bench trial. So, the defaults, criminal with jury, civil with judge. But you can request the opposite. The right to a trial by jury has been an inherent right in the English common law system going all the way back to the Glorious Revolution, when in the 1690s, the people of England were fed up with King James II. They rose up and chased him off the throne and brought in William and Mary to replace him. At that point, William III and Mary II signed a document called the English Bill of Rights. And one of the clauses in the English Bill of Rights was the inherent right of all English citizens to have a trial by jury. Why is that a big deal?
Because there's no bias. Right? They want to eliminate bias by having people, having other citizens kind of determine the outcome of the case.
What do you mean by bias?
Side or another side.
How so?
So it's fair. So say for example, if someone had a problem with black people or something like that, or if someone had a problem with, or if someone's family member died from a DUI accident and they get put on a DUI case, they're going to have a bias towards it because they've had it before, or they've had some sort of situation with it.
I don't see how that would eliminate that.
How? Eliminate what?
So.
Eliminate bias.
So someone kills somebody because they're drinking and driving. How does having a jury eliminate any bias against them?
Eliminate.
You had me with the bias, but I don't understand that example.
Okay.
I also don't understand the racism bias either, how a jury would eliminate potential racists.
Well, because if there's someone of a specific color being defended, and if someone in the jury is racist, then it's gonna be biased.
Yeah.
So
they're more likely to convict.
Right, but it would be unfair.
But I don't understand how having a jury is going to stop that.
I think he's saying that
because
the jury is having a jury is biased. Is that what
you're saying? So the jury is biased? So you're going to get a jury full of racists? You're going to get a jury of people who like drinking and driving? Christ, next you're going to say you're going to get a jury full of Yankees fans. I mean, God.
No. The people that get elected for jury duty are selected without bias. They take people and put them on the jury if they're not biased. That's what I'm trying to say.
But how do you tell if someone's biased?
Yeah,
because they ask all these questions.
Oh.
Based off of what the case is.
Maybe I could lie.
I guess you could.
Well,
I know,
right? Yeah.
That's how mistrial, or that's how not mistrial.
Yeah, but that still doesn't go to the reason why trial by jury was put in.
But it has to do with bias.
Are you asking why it was put in? It was put in because they want the people to have a say.
In doing what?
In contribute to the, because if it's only the judge or something, then it's there you go.
Professor, it was put in because a judge knows the law. They studied for that. A lawyer knows the law. They studied for that. The jury already...
Just because you go to school doesn't mean you actually know law.
All right, sorry, Professor. Yes, you're right.
I'm just saying.
I'm listening to you, and you're just telling me a bunch of stuff, and it can all just be lies.
100%. Do you verify me?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't care.
Trust me. You've got to verify, man. I could be telling you the exact opposite of what really is the truth.
You might not even be a professor.
I might not even be a professor. I could just be some bald guy that's randomly walking up the street and say, ooh, I'll just show up in a classroom. You never know.
Anyways, the jury, unlike the judge or the lawyer, professor, the lawyer and judges are more likely to be educated in what they're doing, correct?
So don't you want educated people making the decisions?
Yes.
Why do you want stupid people making
decisions?
I'm
not saying the jury's stupid. I'm saying that they are random people, like everyday people, right? They hear someone gets in a drunk driving accident. They're going to hear it. They're going to put their testimony in, right? If that person who is drunk driving has been drunk driving before, right? They're going to say this person should not be on the streets because they're going to think about their family. They're going to think about their kids. They're going to think about other people who
get
hit.
So a judge couldn't do that?
A judge can do that. But the judge knows more about the law. The jury, right, they're there to talk amongst each other, right?
It's for the
and
people.
Think of a plan. That's
so the judge isn't going to be for the people?
It is for the people, but the people... Why are you arguing so much against it?
No, because...
But the
professor,
people...
Because you're all like... To give you an analogy, you're all like wringing the toilet bowl, but you're not in the water.
No, okay, that's gross. What's but anyways, Professor, you've said before that you think less government is better, correct?
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes.
So in this circumstance, the judge would be considered the government, right?
Right.
And the people will be considered the people.
Okay.
Right? So the people having the decision, right, puts it more into our hands, our strength, right?
That's
keep going.
Trying.
You finally got there. You
I'm
finally got there.
The whole time.
No, you're not.
That's what we've been all saying.
They don't want all the power to be in the hands of the judges.
Why?
Because they can make mistakes. They can make
checks and balances.
Exactly.
They could make mistakes. Right.
There you go. All right, good. So you're
saying that the whole time.
No, he was talking about being like saying we're going to like put all black people away and we're going to let all the drunk drivers drive everywhere. I mean, I was just being confused.
You're not even a professor. You're just some bald guy, man.
I know. I really am. No, good. See? No, actually, what I did is that's kind of along the lines of the Socratic method. I mean, you guys actually answer what I was asking. So, yeah. It's the reason why we have trial by jury is, okay, you have these qualified individuals that are presiding over the trial, but do you want the government making the decision when it's the government that's accusing the person of committing a crime against the government, and it's the government that's presenting evidence to prove its case that the person actually went against the government? No, you gotta have a check and balance. You gotta let the people make the decision whether they're guilty or not. Did the government prove its case or not? And if the government didn't prove its case, the person goes free. 100%. 100%. See, you knew it. You did know it. By the way, if you voted in this past election, you qualify to sit on a jury.
Yay.
The moment you register to vote, that's where the jury pools in Massachusetts are drawn from.
Yay.
Yep. And you may be called to serve on one or more trials if you get that call.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the responsibility of being on a jury. You're going to let the people make the decision of guilt. By the way, the jury doesn't decide innocence. The jury does not find someone innocent. Rather, what they do is they
find them not guilty.
They find them not guilty of what they are accused of. So, in other words, the government didn't prove their case. Question.
Well, I was just going to bring up like the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yes.
I'm assuming it was played the same way that you're describing with like with the judge, a jury, and like all that other stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 100%. The government just flubbed its case. And there was nothing that Judge Ito could do. Because it was in the hands of the jury. All right.
The jury loved O.J. Simpson.
Now, here's the thing. In Massachusetts, if there is a criminal case, there are 12 members of the jury who get to vote, and there usually are two alternates. The alternates would only be allowed to participate if something happens to one of the 12. To get a conviction, it must, in a criminal case, it must be unanimous. All 12 voting members must agree that the person accused of a crime did, based on the evidence that was presented, not because you like drinking and driving, but because the evidence that he presented was proof that a crime had been committed. On a civil trial, it depends. If it's a civil trial and you request a jury in the district court, you're only going to get 6 members of the jury, and 5 of the 6 must find what's called liability. They must believe the person, the plaintiff, actually has proof that the defendant did whatever harm they are alleging. So criminal case, 12, unanimous. Civil, in a district trial, 5 out of 6. If it's a civil case in a superior court, there are 12 members, but 10 must find for the plaintiff. That's 10. That's 5. 10. I can do my hand math. Questions? Okay. We also have something called a grand jury. A grand jury is not a trial jury. A grand jury is entirely different. A grand jury is a pre-trial jury. So, if someone has been accused of one of the major crimes, say murder, a grand jury is called prior to the trial. They don't decide guilt or not guilty. What a grand jury does is it reviews the evidence that the prosecution has. And it must decide whether there's enough evidence to go forward with the trial. So, we all know the phrase probable cause. Probable cause is not beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what the jury must believe in a criminal trial. With a grand jury, they're presented an outline of the evidence that they have, and they basically must believe that there's probable cause. That there's enough evidence that could possibly link the accused to the crime. For a grand jury, there are 23 people called, and 13 must believe that probable cause exists. 23 people sit on a grand jury, 13 must believe probable cause exists. So basically what happens is the person gets indicted. Now here's the funny thing. If you get called for grand jury duty, you are on call for 3 months. Which means you could be called in for multiple trials or pre-trial hearings. So you could get the evidence presented in multiple trials. Or maybe no major crime occurs during that 3 months when you're on call. In that case, when the 3rd month is up, you're released. But of course, it just depends on the caseload. So, grand juries usually only meet for a day or two most, and if they do meet for a day, it's not all day. Usually it's just a couple hours. Typically what the district attorneys will do if they know there's multiple crimes, they will try to double or triple stack the presentations, just because you've got the grand jury there, and they'll do everything they can to make it more convenient for you. Questions? How do you get chosen? Computers.
It's like a lottery.
Your social security numbers are all in the system on your voter registration cards, and the computer just randomly picks a set number of numbers every couple of months. Now, interestingly enough, back in the late 1990s, based on reports from the Judicial Council, it was determined that a lot of people were complaining about what a pain in the ass it was to serve on jury duty. Because if you get called in, you can basically expect to spend a day or two or three, depending upon the length of the trial. So, what happened was, there was an effort to reform, that's when they raised the threshold of civil cases, pushing more civil cases down to the district court, because as a general rule, the vast majority of district court trials are done in a day. They push it through quickly to make sure the jury is not inconvenienced. But if you're before Superior Court, you can expect to be on a jury 3 days, 5 days, 2 weeks. My father-in-law got called on a trial. He was there for 3 weeks. Now, if you do get put on a jury for more than 3 days, under state law, you cannot be denied serving jury duty by your employer. They cannot deny you. If you get summoned, you have to go. You just got to show proof to your employer that you do have jury duty. And even if the employer decides not to pay you, say you're an hourly worker, the state will give you a stipend of, last I knew it was $50 per day, it might be more. So that basically would expect to be enough to cover your gas, your lunch, and any money that you have to pay to put your car in like a garage or at a meter. But you don't get that, I think, until you serve, I think it's 3 days. I think that's when you can put in the request to get the vouchers. And if you do serve, your name, or you get called, your name is off the list for 3 years. So, last year around this time, I, your esteemed bald guy walking down the street, was called to jury duty. I went in, I showed the court officers my handy dandy lawyer's license, so I didn't have to go through the metal detector. Look at this. Look at how quality. Look at, that's top quality right there. Yeah. So this little piece of card, I don't have to go through the metal detectors. So sometimes, I will admit, I do have my cell phone with me. I can bring my cell phone in. Oh, and there's also sometimes that I'm carrying. This card allows me to go in. I don't have to go through the metal detector. It's this card that lets me carry. But so why? Because I'm also considered an officer of court. Because I'm a Massachusetts bar attorney. So what happened? I go in there, show them my card, went upstairs to the jury room. You're all supposed to fill out the little form and say who you are. You put your jury number down there, and you put your occupation. I put lawyer, handed my card in. The guy sitting behind the desk looked at me and goes like, okay, you can go home. No service. Now the funny thing is just because I'm a lawyer doesn't mean I'm exempt. In Massachusetts, there was a point when police officers, judges, and lawyers were disqualified from serving in juries.
I was going to ask that. I was going to ask if you were, like, are you allowed to if you're an attorney?
I could, but no attorney in their right mind, I think we've had this discussion, would want a lawyer on the jury pool. Because I could basically take control of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just be like the guy goes like, yeah, I know this stuff. It's
yep.
just listen to my opinion.
Yeah, I could just be like, nope, they're wrong. That one's right, that one's wrong.
Well, that's up to the people if they want to listen to you or not.
That's true. That's true. All right, the last two clicks came up at once. I don't know why. Screwed up my PowerPoint. I don't know why it's so low. Normally I add an extra slide in if it gets that far, but it is what it is. All right, two other components of our judicial system. One is the Committee for Public Counsel Services. So let's say you are poor and you cannot afford to have an attorney that you pay for. Well, this is the entity that will allow you to get a public servant. The Committee for Public Counsel Services. Lawyers either accept small pay from the courts to give their time, or sometimes they do it pro bono. They volunteer and it counts as community service. I did it a few times when I was trying to figure out like real estate law, land law, and I went and served a few days in housing court and just gave my time, and it was just interesting. But I know one of my buddies who's he's a senior citizen and he's closed down his practice. He actually works for this system and he goes and he represents children in child custody cases. And I think he was telling me he gets paid like $50 an hour or something like that. I make more money doing what I'm doing, so. But at least I know I have an option to fall back on when I retire. So if you are poor, you will not be denied a lawyer in Massachusetts unless you expressly request it. If you say, I don't want an attorney, I want to represent myself, the judge will be like, are you sure? Are you really sure? And if you are adamant, they will let you do so. It's your right. Last but not least, small claims. Small claims are technically a division within the district court. But these are where the petty claims against individuals occur. In Massachusetts, the threshold is $7,000 maximum claim for damage. $7,000. Small claims typically don't go before a judge. Usually it goes before a judge magistrate, who is kind of like a judge in training. And there's no jury. You usually meet in an office, and it's usually handled in minutes. You get to present your claim against the person that you're making the claim against. They have a right to respond, and the judge magistrate will basically make a decision. So, I have sued successfully four of the last five contractors I had working on my house in small claims.
Why?
Because they didn't do good work. And I know under Massachusetts general law, we have what's known as Chapter 93A, which is the consumer protection statute, and there's a process in which you can get triple damages. So I sued two of the contractors for $5,000 under Chapter 93A, and the court awarded me triple damages. So instead of the $5,000, I got $15,000. But it's a complicated problem. It's not as easy as it sounds. There's a lot of steps involved.
Like, oh, bro, just like chipped my lawn or something, or like parked in my lawn, I'm going to sue this guy. Like,
No. It doesn't work that way. You have to send them a letter. They have 30 days to respond. The only way you can pursue with that claim is if there is no response. Of course, you have to have proof that the letter was delivered, so you have to do a certified letter. And if they make any attempt to contact you, that essentially stops the claim.
Oh, also, I was going to ask, like, under a law, okay, so if you're suing somebody, they have a right to know, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, they get notice. 100%.
Yeah.
Same thing if the government's making a an accusation against you.
Because in...
Notice is part of due process of law.
Mm-hmm. I remember in our finance class, we were talking about how a lot of people who get sued, they don't even realize they're getting sued because, like, I don't know, they don't get the letter or something, or, like, they're moving around a lot, and they don't even realize they're being sued. So then they, And there's like this person who gets
sucks
paid.
To be them, because what ends up happening is then
they,
if they don't show up,
yeah,
if they don't show up, you go before a judge and the plaintiff can request what's called a declaratory judgment, mm-hmm. which is an automatic win.
Mm-hmm.
And then the court will go after them and they can they have the right to like put a hold on your pay. They can put an attachment on your bank accounts.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't avoid it.
That's interesting.
Well, like,
but the other end of the story is if you do actually get the letter in the mail,
right.
yes, should respond. Because if you don't, you lose.
Yeah.
How do I know I'm not being sued right now? Like, what if someone just, like, says, oh, I hate that guy, and sues me?
Because they have to, like, send...
Don't
you get a...
You get a summons.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get a copy of the complaint.
What if I don't get a summons?
Then
you're not being sued.
But, like, with her thing, her case, it's like these people don't even know they're being sued.
Well, that stinks.
But
don't be dumb.
Yeah, like,
what do you mean?
Don't be dumb.
It's in like rare occurrences where like somebody obviously maybe they're like moving around and like they keep, like they don't have maybe it went to their last address. This is just like a random like I'm just picking a random scenario. Like maybe it went to their last address and they moved and they don't know. They automatically lose.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So don't be dumb. If you move, make sure you file your new address at your new post office and put a change of address at your old post office.
Mm-hmm.
That's being responsible.
But I heard that, so I don't know what they're called, but so if the person doesn't show up, like the person's getting sued or something, somebody gets paid like $150 or something. I don't know who.
Bounty hunter?
What is it? Oh, wait, I don't know.
To go find them?
No, I don't know, but like we were talking about it in my finance class. Maybe I'll like search it up.
Yeah, there are attorneys.
Yes.
That
yes.
can that, again. That's another hired service.
And like so.
I think it's a $100 claim. Yeah.
Right. So they don't put much effort into letting you know that you're getting sued, kind of like on purpose.
Well,
or something.
The only way it depends upon the nature of the claim.
Oh.
So. With small claims, there's no requirement that a sheriff deliver the summons. If it's a superior court civil claim, you hire the sheriff's department, they find the person and put the papers in their hands.
So like, you used to be like,
but if you don't check your mail, that's not on the person suing you, that's on you. Because the court does not forgive stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we all know, ignorance is not a defense.
Yeah.
All right. I think I'm done with the courts. Any other questions on this?
Class should be over.
No.
Yes.
No, we still got 17 minutes left.
17 minutes? What are you looking at?
When's our next exam?
As soon as I'm done with the bureaucracy.
So, like, what day?
How quickly do you want me to talk? I could get it done in 15 minutes if you want.
Yeah, but like...
That means we'll have it this weekend.
No, what are you doing?
Or do you want me to just kind of get through a good chunk of it today, finish it up on Tuesday, so you'll take it on Wednesday?
That would be better.
All right. Well, I'm here to serve. All right. The bureaucracy. This is the part of government that most people think of when they refer to the government. The bureaucracy literally means the rule of offices. It is the maze of offices and agencies and departments and divisions that essentially does the work of the government. Now, truth be told, though, due to the size and complexity of our state, as well as the size and complexities of all the other states, as well as at the United States government level, you need some type of bureaucratic system. You can't have our governor, our other elected executive officers, and 200 members of the general court doing all government work. It's physically impossible. So by using bureaucratic systems, this allows programs to be administered. And every single state program that's on the books in any state is run by part of the bureaucracy. Most of them are in the executive branch. There are some agencies that are part of the legislature. There are some agencies that are part of the courts. But the vast majority of them are in the executive branch. So their job is to execute the law. Now, according to the book, somewhere in the book, it says, I think in the beginning of the bureaucracy chapter, that there are over 20 million state and local employees. I think that number is higher today, but let's just say, if it's true that we actually have 350 million people living in the United States, the number is almost representing what? One government employee for every 100 people? One for every 10. Maybe one for every 15. That's insane when you think about it. In Massachusetts, there are over 400,000 state and local employees. Full and part-time. By the way, does anyone know what the largest cluster of state employees are?
What state?
No, in Massachusetts. The largest job type of state employees. Teachers. Teachers. Massachusetts, there are about 80,000 teachers. Because you got to think of how many school districts we have, how many teachers work in every single school district. Now, ironically, the teachers also suck up 60% of state and local town budgets.
It's true, man. Schools are expensive.
Really is. Really is. And in Sutton, we have about... the last budget was about $40 million. It was like 39 and change. And of that, 62% goes to the schools. And of that, 90% of that line item is just salaries.
Wow.
Yep. And the sad thing is teachers don't even work full-time jobs. When you think about it, how many hours do teachers actually teach? How many hours are they actually in front of students? Five, if even, during the day. Because they get their lunch, they get their prep. Most school days are at most 6.5 hours. And then they work 185 days out of the year.
They get weekends off, summers off.
Right. And if you work in the private sector, you're going to work probably about 250, 260 days out of the year. So they work two-thirds of a day, they work two-thirds of... calendar year.
And they get paid for those days off too.
And they get paid for the year, yeah, salary. It's a good gig because it's impossible to get fired, and chances are you're never going to be downsized because there's always going to be more kids.
Yeah, but there's a lot of bad things about it too.
So. Yeah, that's the reason why I'm no longer a public. I was a public school teacher for about 6 years, and that was just, yeah.
Don't get it.
You know the worst part about being a public school teacher?
Yeah, what is it?
It's not the kids, it's the parents.
Oh. Yeah, don't get it twisted. Being a teacher is not all as good as it sounds.
No, it's trying. All right. So, think about that. Massachusetts, our total population is like 7.3 million people. So, our current ratio is one government employee for about every 18 people that live in the state. And, of course, it includes police, it includes firemen, it includes, you know, the highway guys, DPW, MassDOT, blah, 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 blah. All bureaucracies, I don't care if it's a government bureaucracy or a private sector bureaucracy, all bureaucracies function the exact same way. They are all hierarchies, top down. That's how they operate, top down. Meaning, the people at the top have the authority, but the people at the bottom do most of the work. And I wish I had the image, but I don't because I haven't added pictures this far down into the semester. But essentially, it's a pyramid. Obviously, the higher up you go, the less number of people that are there, even though they have the highest level of authority. Now, there is a division of labor.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do you have the different tiers of authority, but within each tier, there are different job responsibilities. Commonly referred to as the division of labor. And as I said, this is done vertically and horizontally. All right. For example, let's say your bureaucracy has separate departments that handle personnel, accounting, purchasing, and maybe data processing. You will find those at different points on the power structure because they have authority over certain responsibilities. But just because someone works in the HR department, who is in charge of handling all human resource matters, doesn't mean they have any authority over a department manager or even a supervisor.
I can smell it.
What happened?
The marker.
That marker reeks, dude.
I can smell it from here.
Oh my God, it's just an expo. Non-toxic.
That's the problem.
Well, hey, it's not my fault. Not too long ago, we had chalkboards. I used to love the chalkboards here.
Yeah, yeah. You should rub your nails on them and make it like, oh, look at me!
Yeah, but those are obsolete now. Those are...
They're obsolete.
I don't have fingernails. No, I like chalk. I just, there was something, it felt good to write in chalk.
Yeah, you like to smell the puff and stuff and like to line it up.
Hmm?
What?
No, I don't get stoned on chalk dust. For Christ's sakes. All right, so you get it? There's a hierarchy, there's vertical divisions. The higher up you go, as you make your way up, you have less specialization. You actually have more generalization. Because like the CEO of the company is technically in charge of everything within the company, but they may not know how to operate the mail system. They may not know how to operate the forklift. So you have at the lower level, you have more specialization, depending upon the duties that are assigned in each level. So if you want to think of it like a store, we'll say the typical Walmart. Obviously you have the store manager that's in charge of making sure the store functions, but you also have the cashiers, you have the dock workers, you have the people who stock the shelves. Now you have the people that do the pulling of the orders. You know, each of those jobs have certain specialities that are associated with those positions. But someone above them may have more authority, even if they don't know exactly what everyone does. So we have staff officers and we have line officers. Staff officers provide the specialty services. So these are your HR people, for example. These are your accountants. Line officers are the different managers at each line. So maybe they're called the department head, maybe they're called an assistant manager, whatever the authority is on that particular level. I've already done the specialization. But here is the biggest thing. In order for bureaucracies to function, it cannot be subjective, meaning everybody cannot do whatever they want whenever they want, but rather it has to be a rule-based process. So what does this mean? You eliminate individual discretion. which potentially could eliminate mistakes, human error.
It also makes it easier to potentially fire somebody. So if, again, going back to Walmart, say you are working, you are one of the certified forklift drivers, in order to get onto that position, there's a certain amount of hours of training that you have to engage in. You have to basically get a badge. You know, that's proof positive that you have taken these classes. And are the hours perfect? No. But the company said, this is the rule. This is how many hours you must take. Maybe the company says there's requirements to do extra training. You must do that. And what happens if you don't?
You're not qualified.
You're not qualified and you're not going to be able to drive a forklift.
They'll assign you in another department. So, this is almost like a military entity. This allows the people at the top to ensure that the people at the bottom are working to maximum efficiency, in theory. In theory. Questions? Almost done.
Keep in mind,
governments are not the only social institutions that have bureaucratic structures. Corporations, universities, hospitals,
heck, even charitable organizations function as bureaucracies. So, this little symbol on my hat represents the fact that I am one of the members of the Sons of the American Legion at my local American Legion post, 414 and Sun. I am a member, which means I can walk in the door. I've been involved for about a decade, and during that time I have been elected. I am currently the commander of the Sons. The Sons are one of four groups that work in the Legion. There are the Legionnaires, who are the veterans. There are the Sons, who are the son of veterans. There is the Auxiliary, mostly the daughters and wives of veterans. And then there's a group called the Riders. These are the people that are dual members that like riding Harley-Davidsons, motorcycles. So, I am the line officer of my line, of being the Sons. And we get to do all the grunt work. We're the ones that set up everything. We're the ones that clean everything. We're the ones that make sure the post functions. But I am also a state officer. I am a vice commander at the detachment of Massachusetts. So not only am I serving in my local, but I'm elevated. I'm one of the people that make sure that all of the squadrons across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts are doing the charitable work, as required by the national organization. And by the way, I am also a member of a national committee. So I, on this bureaucratic structure of the Sons of the American Legion, I am at different points. And each point has different roles. If you belong to a club, probably has that as well. If it is a bigger organization than just a small group of people that hang out and shoot the breeze. But there's a difference between government bureaucracies and private bureaucracies. Government bureaucracies follow complex procedures for hiring, for firing, because government bureaucracies are required to protect the rights of the employees. Private bureaucracies don't have those constraints. So, you work for a government agency, you probably have a contract. You're probably a member of a government union. That even if you are incompetent, you will be protected. And in order to get rid of someone who works for the government that's incompetent, it usually takes multiple years.
Like with teachers?
Exactly. In the private sector, you screw up at your job, the boss is going to fire you. On teachers, did you ever hear of New York's rubber room?
Never know.
New York City decided years ago it's cheaper to keep bad teachers on the payroll than it is to fire them. So there are teachers in New York City that don't go to the schools. They report to a dedicated office that's called the rubber room, and they sit there during the school day in this big open room. There's TVs, there's music, they read newspapers. It's insane.
And they do, what are they doing?
Nothing. They just get paid to show up and report to the rubber room.
Who's in there?
Is that their job?
Teachers that accused of possibly engaged in, I don't want to say outright sexual conduct, but we'll say less appropriate behavior. Maybe there are people that maybe have a few screws loose.
And they go there, that's crazy.
Yeah, because the union doesn't let them go because the union relies upon everyone's dues.
So, who are the teachers teaching the kids if they're just going to read newspapers in this room?
They have to hire other teachers. So New York City has more classroom teachers on the budget than actually teaching classrooms.
That makes sense.
That's the other point. Private bureaucracies have to watch every single penny. They have to be efficient. Government bureaucracies don't. So that's the whole point of what Trump's doing with DOGE, the Department of Governmental, I forgot what the E was.
Department of Education.
No.
Environment.
No. Governmental.
He's talking about Dogecoin.
No, I'm talking about the new government Trump's going to make with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yeah, it's the fake organization he made for Elon to run.
What's that about?
Yeah, so what they're going to do is those guys are going to get paid $1 each. And they are going to go through the budget, and they are going to expose
Department
things
of government
like
efficiency.
That's
oh,
what it is.
Oh, because the audits now. It's not. Like, oh wait. No.
Oh yes, they will.
Really?
Oh yes, they will.
You think he's putting him in charge of actual stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
So, yes.
The guy that he's already getting annoyed with because he's everywhere and won't leave him alone.
They're going to give him. They're going to get the budget. They're going to go through the budget, and they're going to point out items, and they're going to put it on X. Things like the $21 million that were paid to study the behavior patterns of squirrels.
That can actually be very beneficial.
Doesn't matter. Is that a worthy expense of taxpayer money when we're currently paying more on our deficit interest than we are any other line item in the federal budget?
A lot of those behavioral studies actually relate back to pharmaceuticals.
They're all going to get cut.
Wait, no more vaccines for us, huh?
Yeah.
So they're going to expose what they've been using the money on?
They're going to expose what exactly. They're going to make suggestions, and they're going to say, look, this money's being spent here, this money's being spent here, this money's going to be spent here,
and then
it's
what
going
happens?
To be part of the political discussion.
That's
is
good.
It worthy of supporting or not? It's called transparency.
So they're going to let a bunch of people who don't understand what these things are used for or understand their benefits decide what does and doesn't get done?
Yes.
Shrewsbury's been arguing about electing their planning board.
Yep. We have three elected members and two appointed.
Interesting.
We have two elected. No, we have five. I can't remember the breakdown. We have split.
Our planning board is full appointed.
Yep.
People want to be full elected.
Yep.